Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. I hope you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and healthy right now. And yes, we have a lot of things going in the sports world right now. It's just an interesting time of year right now. Look at all the things happening. I mean, Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson are suddenly going to be eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. We found that out yesterday. It's a little bit interesting, isn't it? The Stanley Cup playoffs are very tight. We do still have two teams from Canada in it. You know, America's hat would love nothing more than to win that four-team challenge and then pick up a Stanley Cup. You know those Levi's wearing moose-riding folks are getting pretty excited. And, you know, we move over to the NBA where we have had a number of surprises lately. I mean, first, it looks like the defending champion Boston Celtics are done. Now Jason Tatum is out with a blown Achilles. That is bad news for Boston. Looks like they may go down to the Knicks. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they'll probably advance, but they're in a dogfight against my Denver Nuggets, who are just limping to the finish line. See if Denver can make this go any longer. And then, on Monday, we had the NBA draft lottery, where the Dallas Mavericks, remember, a team that made the playoffs as a play-in team, with just 1.8% chance of getting the number one draft pick, somehow got the number one draft pick. Now, that's just a coincidence, right? I mean, the Mavericks gave the Los Angeles Lakers Luka Doncic for like a bag of magic beans, and Dallas fans were ready to burn the arena to the ground, and then they just happened to win the lottery. What? No way. That never happens. Actually, it does. Do you realize there have been just recently a few teams that received the number one pick right after they traded away a superstar? I mean, New Orleans got to pick up Anthony Davis after they had traded away Chris Paul. New Orleans again got to pick Zion Williamson after trading away, Anthony Davis. And now, the Mavericks have the chance to draft Duke superstar Cooper Flagg after they gave away Luka Doncic to the Lakers. Huh. The NBA. It's fixtastic. Now, to be fair, Mavericks GM Nico Harrison says he won't trade the pick, but, I mean, I think we could all kind of see that idiot trading the pick away for, like, James Harden or Bradley Beal at the last second, couldn't we? That wouldn't shock me at all. And it does make me laugh when I hear the NBA and the NBA pundits act like this league is above reproach when it comes to the conspiracy theories about the draft. Like, if you really believe there's conspiracy theories, you're just stupid. I mean, this league would never do such a thing. Oh, you mean the league that actually has to rig the draft because teams were cheating and tanking? Yeah, that league wouldn't cheat? Yeah, of course they wouldn't. They don't have dirty refs either. I mean, except for that one that went to jail for actual cheating. But it was just him. It was just him. No one else. Nothing to see here. Hey, it is a fun time of year. No, there's no football. We don't have any college football. We don't have any NFL. But it is kind of a fun time of year where we have a number of sports going right now and a number of stories coming out right now. And of course, one of those sports that is going right now is auto racing. No, no, don't turn off the podcast. You're going to have to trust me on this. Hey, the 109th running of the Indianapolis 500 will be taking place the Sunday over Memorial Weekend, just a little over a week away. And I have a guest today that is going to get us ready for the big race. Trust me, you don't want to miss this. Joining us this week on the Daily Dose, we have a very special guest that I'm really looking forward to speaking with again, because Ray Hartgen joined the Dose a couple of years ago after he had written a book called Immaculate, How the Steelers Saved Pittsburgh. It's a collection of stories about the Pittsburgh Steelers. I promise you, you go read it right now. You'll enjoy it. Doesn't matter if you're a Steelers fan or not. I'm not a Steelers fan. I enjoyed the heck out of it. He also finished another book, way more personal in nature, Me, Myself, and My Multiple Myeloma. And he has now released a book called The Indy 500, A Year-Long Quest to Win the Greatest Spectacle in Racing. Yes, and we're both going to hold up copies of this on the screen, in which he follows one full calendar year of the preparation for what it is to race at the Indy 500. It is a race like no other. Ray, it is so good to see you. Congrats on the book, and welcome back to the Daily Dose.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity, Clint. And I appreciate you looking at an early edition of the Indy 500, A Year-Long Quest to Win the Greatest Spectacle in Racing, and writing an endorsement for it. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Well, Ray, I was absolutely honored that you asked me to do that. You know, to see my name anywhere near yours is a compliment. So I will absolutely, you know, take the opportunity to put my name somewhere in a book that you've written, because that was really, really cool for me. I thought that was really, really fun. But, you know, I got this book. You had sent it to me. I knew the subject matter. And I was like, I can't wait to dig into it. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, you talk about being kind of a Homer fan. I'm a Homer fan because I love racing. Mm-hmm. And Dad was a race car driver. I have whatever you want to call it, racing in the blood, whatever. But it was interesting to me, Ray, because you did such a good job of going inside of Indy and giving a perspective of a number of different areas that I don't think people all the time understand. Is there, how did this project come about?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been a racing fan since I was a little kid, and this is what started it for me, Clint. It's a book. This is a new edition of a reprint of a book that I bought from, remember the old Scholastic America catalogs you had in school?
Yeah.
You know, your teacher passed them around, and I was like in third grade, and I discovered this great book called The Indy 500, 30 Days in May, written by Hal Higdon. And it was around 1972, 1973. So I was like 8, 9 years old. And Hal Higdon's book chronicled the 1970 Indianapolis 500 from the day before the track opened on April 30th to the race day on May 30th. And so it was just like the everyday going ons at Indianapolis to practice for qualifications, to qualify for the race, then to run the race. And, you know, as a kid, it just captivated my imagination, and it ignited a passion in me for the event and for the sport. And it never left. And for, you know, I got lucky as a kid. My dad was a career military officer. And when I was in eighth grade, he got stationed at Fort Benjamin Harrison, or what used to be Fort Benjamin Harrison in Indianapolis. I was like, holy cow, man, I just read this book like, you know, 5 years ahead of time. And, you know, my family was from Texas, and we'd always been super Tex, A.J. Foyt fans, sort of, sure, but kind of casual. But now I had the chance to actually go to the Speedway and check it out. So I already had this passion about the race. And then going to the Speedway, I get it, and some people don't think auto racing is for them. But if you haven't been to an auto race, it doesn't matter what auto race you go to. But if it doesn't have to be the Indianapolis 500. Just go to the local bull ring outside your town, and just go experience it. And it might not be for you. It is for me, man. I can tell you, though, you know, as a kid, just hearing the sounds of the engines, smelling the racing fuel exhaust, you know, you can feel it as the cars go by. You can actually taste them when they go by. You're like, and you know, just sensory overload, and going to the Speedway and watching those cars, you know, blast around, you know, I just became hooked. And because of that, you know, the passion, you know, the Indy 500 has been a big part of my life. You know, since I read that book, you know, I've been a ticket holder for, you know, almost 40 years now. I think 1986 was my first one. My first time I bought tickets. My first race was in 1979. First time I went to the track was 1978. You know, it's been a big part of my life, and I wanted to update Higdon's great book and, you know, and tell the story of a current race. And so, you know, I thought, you know, one of my mottos is if not now, when? So I was like, if not now, when? So this book, my new book, it starts, as you know, with two laps to go in the 2023 race. And then it ends at the victory banquet at the conclusion of the 2024 race. And it's a book I'm proud of. I think it's, you know, cool. You know, Higdon's book just covers 1 month. you know, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indy 500 no longer is a month-long event. It's really just been compressed to a couple of weeks. And I didn't think a couple of weeks was enough. But, you know, then, you know, it really dawned on me and I was reminded that, you know, for an auto racer in the IndyCar series, it doesn't matter. None of the other races really matter. I mean, there are some crown jewels that you want to do well in, the Long Beach Grand Prix, you know, and things like that. But the Indianapolis 500 makes your career. You know, if you can win that race, you've won the year, regardless of what you've done through the course of the season. And it also makes your career. You are an Indy 500 champion. They've raced 108 editions of this race. It's the world's biggest auto race. You know, and it really is, you know, once 1 year is done, all of us fans, all of the racing drivers, all of the racing teams, they're preparing for the next race, right? And so I thought, well, let's just make this kind of like a year-long diary. And so, you know, I tried to, you know, all the key points that happened during the year to get ready for the race, but also wanted to delve into some of the history, you know, because you can't really talk about the Indianapolis 500 without talking about, you know, the creation of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and that long history of that and all these wonderful personalities, men and women, that, you know, just the 801 drivers in history that have participated in the race, but also, you know, the teams that are behind them and the fans, you know, like, there are a lot of stories to share, and I'm glad you enjoyed the book because it certainly was a passion project of mine.
Well, the passion comes through because as you're reading it, you could feel how much you love the race. What is it? And I'm asking you a question that there's probably no answer to. Why is Indy different? Why is the Indy 500 just different? Because it absolutely is.
Yeah, you know, it's the competition. It's difficult. You know, it particularly when there's more cars entered than there are spots in the race. Only 33 cars can run in the race. So, you know, it's not like a typical race. A typical race is a weekend. You know, you get there and you practice on Friday, you qualify on Saturday, you race on Sunday. At Indianapolis, back when I was a kid, you used to get there at the beginning of the month. The race was at the end of the month. You spend the whole month there. But now you spend 2 weeks there. You're like, so this coming weekend, it will be, as this episode is being recorded, this coming weekend will be the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, which is on the road course. And then right after that, they'll start practicing for the Indy 500 on the oval. And so, you know, the first step of is practice and just getting up to speed. You have to qualify. And there's a lot of drama in that, you know, because you have to make the biggest race of the year. And so, you know, there's some cars that are going to qualify rather easily. But if you make a mistake in qualifying, you know, rack it up against the wall and destroy your car, now you've got, you know, a big obstacle to try to overcome. So there's the drama of just qualifying for the race. And then there's, once you've qualified the race, preparing a car that can now, instead of, you know, qualify over four laps, now it has to race over 200 laps, right? And, you know, for those of you who might not be familiar with the 500, you know, a fuel stint is about 30 laps, you know, and your car can change dramatically as your fuel load lessens, as your tires wear, and also, you know, how your car handles, whether it's in clean air or whether it's in traffic, can be you know, a lot of different variables there. So you want to have a car, you're practicing all this time to not only qualify, but then to develop a car that's well-balanced, that can run well, you know, out front, it can well run well behind another car, the car, you know, well-balanced, easy on your tires, and all that. So it's for me, it's just this process and this, like, you know, 2 week long drama at the track of preparing for what turns out to be 500 miles on, you know, the Sunday Memorial Day weekend.
Ray, there were times reading the book, I shouldn't have been, but I was kind of surprised by the logistics that you just take for granted. Hey, this team needs a supercharger. They're waiting for it. They can't get it. They're trying to get parts for this car. You just take it for granted. Hey, these guys just go get whatever they want. They reach into their closet and they pull out what they need and they put their... That is not how it works at all. I was kind of surprised by some of the stories that you told. You don't really account sometimes for the logistics that go into this race, though.
Yeah, it's so much more than the driver and the car owner, you know. Yes. And then if, you know, if you're just looking at the pit crew, you know, and you see the, you know, the people just changing tires and putting fuel in the car. An entire organization, hundreds of people, you know, working for a race team to, you know, procure sponsorships, to build, you know, chassis and to assemble cars, you know, back at the factory. Then there's also at the track, you know, any damage that gets done, any, you know, failures, machinery, you know, components of the car and so forth needing to be replaced. Just hundreds of people, you know, working for one solitary goal, and that is to win on race day. And, And it's just, it's, I find it exciting to be around. And there's always some sort of story, you know. And, you know, particularly in Indianapolis, you know, I loved the good old days. And the good old days for me were when I was growing up there in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. You know, there would be 2 weekends of qualifying. The rules at the time stated that the car qualified, not the driver. So, you know, if your car got bumped, you know, turned out to be too slow, you qualified for the race, but then somebody qualified faster, that car was gone. And so if you're a car owner, you know, if I like Clint's my driver, I'm like, well, I need to have a car for Clint, but I need a backup car for Clint, you know, and so they were called T cars. And so like, you know, AJ Foyt would show up with 3 cars, the 14, the 14T and the 84. And so he'd be by himself. He would be the driver on the team. And he was always good. He would qualify the 14 car on the first weekend. And so now the horse trading came about. So the 14's been qualified. Now, if you've got money out there, here's a great race car, the 14T. Come over to Super Texas Garage. Maybe we can work out a deal. And then, of course, his 84, since the 14 was already qualified, he'd let his good friend and a great racing driver named George Schneider, he'd let him race the 84. But, you know, it was like in between weekends of qualifying, all these drivers, the Pat Patrick team would have, you know, it's their T cars a lot of times available. It was just all this horse trading, you know, drivers who had shown up with just a helmet and a driving uniform the week before. But now it's like, well, how can I put together some sponsorship package to, you know, get in a car for the biggest race in the world? And, you know, it was a great developmental series back in the day, too. The Indy 500 had a lot of different chassis, a lot of different engines, and then the mix and matching of the chassis and engines. And that was always, you know, fun to follow around. And, you know, each year had, you know, there was, you know, some, you know, matches and mixes that were better than others. And it was like, you know, who had the Lola, who had the March, who had the, you know, the Cosworth or the Chevy or the Mercedes. So lots of fun. It's changed over the years. Now there's just a single chassis manufacturer, 2 different engine manufacturers, but still the excitement for me, you know, someone's been hooked for, you know, since the 70s, it just hasn't ended.
Right. You said your first Indy that you actually attended in person was, I believe,
1978 was the first time I went to the track for practice and qualifying. But the first race day was 1979, Rick Mears' first victory.
Mears won at that year. What do you remember from that first day, that first race you went to?
You know, the crowd, you know, the speedway is enormous, right? And, you know, you know, going there for practice and, you know, practice, you drive underneath the track and you come out of the infield and, you know, you're right there along pit lane. And you know, that's a different type of perspective. Then for qualifying, we had been along the front straight, you know, sitting up on the upper deck watching it. But, you know, come race day, you know, 400,000 fans descend on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I mean, when I was my first race there, that was bigger than the city of Cincinnati, you know, and it was just around a 2.5 mile oval track. And so the crowd, the sunshine, and you know, my biggest memory of that day is my favorite car to this day. It was the Pennzoil, the Chaparral. It was driven by Al Unser Sr. At the time, it was just Al Unser. Nobody had heard of his son.
Yeah, hadn't heard of Junior yet. Yep.
He started third outside of the first row. He led easily the first 100 laps in this Hall, Jim Hall designed car. Jim Hall's a legendary car designer. Came up with the Chaparral. It's kind of invented the ground effects race cars in the Can-Am series to begin with. This revolutionized IndyCar racing. That year, there was a transmission seal that broke on the back of his car about halfway through the race, and it ended, you know, out of the first 100-some-odd laps, you know, he had led almost all of the laps, Al Unser. He left that team at the end of the year. Johnny Rutherford got into that car, ended up winning the 1982 race, basically in the same car that raced in 1979. This beautiful chrome yellow Pennzoil-sponsored Chaparral 2K is what it was called. Still my favorite car to the day. I just look at that thing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, and it just looks fast standing still.
It's so funny you say that, because there are cars that I can still go back to and just go, that was one of my favorite cars. There are cars, and we'll talk about drivers, but there are cars that I still can look back and just go, that car, Gordon Johncock's car, the STP, kind of baby blue and red in 82-ish. It's gorgeous. It's just a beautiful car. And I'm not even a huge fan of the spaceship looking cars. I understand it. I'll take AJ61 front engine roadster. It's gorgeous. Just absolutely beautiful. White with the red and blue number. Just perfect. Gorgeous car.
When Jimmy Clark came over from Formula One with the Lotus, you know, rear engine cars, green with yellow stripes. I remember that 82 car for high school graduation. My parents gave me tickets to the race right on the front stretch. And Gordon Johnson held on to win that race from Rick Mears.
Mears was coming fast. Mears was fast. Time.
Yeah, and they were both beautiful cars. That Penske car, I think it was the PC7 that Rick Mears is driving.
White and blue,
But yeah, it's you know, it is funny, you know, us fans, you know, we have favorite drivers. We also have favorite cars, you know, and favorite liveries. You know, it's like, well, that's a paint job. Sure. Just was cool, you know.
Okay, I've got a few questions here for you. There are no wrong answers. If you had to pick a particular year, a particular race that was your favorite, what's your favorite race?
Oh, man, what a...
I know, it's going to be tough. It's like picking your favorite child.
You know, 91 was a great race. This unbelievable
really good duel
between Rick Mears and Michael Andretti. Yeah. 1992 is another one for me is... that was Al Unser Jr. He was my favorite driver at the time. And he won by about a half a car length from Scott Goodyear. And that was a super exciting race. I think that's probably the most memorable moment for me. I was sitting along the inside of the front stretch, you know, behind the pits. So we got to watch this whole thing coming through. The race was really dramatic at the end, but it hadn't been leading up to it. Michael Andretti dominated that race. Then I, you know, had a fuel pump problem with just a, you know, less than 20 laps to go. And all of a sudden, we had this two-car duel between Unser Jr. and Scott Goodyear.
Well, and if I remember right, Goodyear had started 33rd. He was dead last in the pack, and I think he just about won that thing.
He may have, and you know, he got the short end of a stick. Geez, just a couple of years later, losing out to Jacques Villeneuve. He crossed the finish line first. Got disqualified for passing the pace car coming to the green flag on a late yellow. Scott Goodyear is a great racer, but that 92 race I think is probably the most memorable for me, just from the
pretty good
being an Unser Jr. fan and watching him, you know, you know, win the race right there on that last lap.
Okay. We talked about it. Maybe you just gave your answer, but here's another question. There are no wrong answers. I give you one driver all time at the 500. Who are you taking? Who do you trust the most to bring home a win for you? Who's going to come home with the checkers?
I think if I was a car owner and I wanted someone to drive it, I would pick Helio Castroneves. He's won four of them, which is as tied for as many as anybody. There's been four drivers who have won four each. He's also finished second a few times as well. He has a way of he knows how to get around the track, knows how to qualify. He's been there, done that. Even today, if I was starting up a race team, you know, I'd run a two-car team. I want Helio being being the veteran driver, then I put a young driver in there as well, and let him go at it. But Helio Castroneves,
he's pretty good.
Yeah,
he's a pretty good one. There are four drivers now that have won, you know, the 500 four different times: AJ Foyt, Rick Mears, Al Unser, and of course Helio Castroneves. Why were these guys special? Was it just right place, right time? Was it just lightning struck? What made those four guys that good? Because it didn't just happen once or twice; they kept doing it.
Yeah, you know, I think some people look at AJ Foyt and they're like, yeah, you know, he raced in 35 races. No wonder he won four. Nah, stop there. You know, he's the only driver who's ever won in a front engine car and a rear engine car. He won three 500s in 61, 64, and 67. So three of them were in within, you know, 6 years. And then 10 years later, 1977, he won another one. You know, the tail end of his career, when, you know, he was an older driver, you know, he didn't win races there. So, you know, AJ was fast in everything, right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
This is a guy who won Le Mans in his only time going to Le Mans. So, you know, this is and he has raced in everything, you know, dirt, pavement, ovals, road courses. It doesn't matter if it was on wheels and had an engine, he was super fast. Rick Mears was like this wonderful technician, you know. You know, Rick Mears was the guy who didn't care how fast he went. He just happened to be really fast. You know, he was like maybe the ultra competitor. All he wanted to do was finish the race ahead of you. And it didn't matter how fast he was going. And he was a brilliant racer. He was injured, you know, in the middle part of his career, almost lost his feet in a crash up in Canada. You know, and so I think a lot of people forget the fact that, you know, he had to overcome a serious injury to his feet, also some serious burns he suffered in Indianapolis in a fire on pit lane 1 year. You know, the fact that he won his four, I think, was amazing. Alan Sir Sr., one of the best racing drivers ever, one of the best racing, you know, families ever. His brother, Bobby Unser, and then his son, Al Unser Jr. I mean, between them, they have 9 Indy 500s victories. Not too bad, but Al was great. He won it consecutively in 70 and 71, and was competitive all the time when he was there. And then Castro Neves has been super strong. So, you know, I don't think it was in the right place at the right time. You know, they all had different types of characteristics of how they raced. I think, you know, a lot of times A.J. Foyt, just out of sheer will, you know, particularly in those front engine roadsters where, I mean, it was super dangerous, but also you had to be a big, strong guy to drive those cars around. Right. You know, and then, you know, you get into the cars of today where you don't need to be big and strong, although they don't have power steering. It's a lot more finesse and a lot more precision and a lot more feel for the car, you know, the eye hand coordination, certainly, but just the feel of it in the seat of your pants of what the car is doing and then making those adjustments with your hands. And, you know, and a person like, you know, Castro Neves has been, you know, fantastic at doing that. So, you know, I don't think it was in the right place at the right time. Certainly you need a good car to be able to compete. But those four guys, they're all special in their own way. That answer your question, Clint?
Yeah, I think it 100% did. We talked about a little bit, maybe that was your favorite era. Do you have a favorite era that you just look back on? Man, this block of years, I love that era because I've got 3 or 4 of them, so I don't know if I can really pick one.
Well, I mean, I do like, you know, the 70s, because that's when I was first introduced to it. So that just brings, there's so much sentimental value to that.
Of course.
But I got to tell you, Clint, in the late 80s to the early 90s, I thought CART, which is the sanctioning body for IndyCar racing in the United States, championship auto racing teams, I thought CART was the best auto racing in the world. Yep. And that includes Formula One. I've been a Formula One fan since the 70s, right? And in the mid-80s, Formula One was really, you know, it was. I still watched every single race, but it was very predictable. The McLarens dominated in the early, and then in the late 80s and 90s, it was the Williams cars. And, you know, you pretty much knew who was going to win the race even before the Friday started off. Whereas in CART, you had an unbelievable amount of competition. They were racing on big ovals, small ovals, road courses, natural terrain road courses, street courses. Fans were showing up like crazy. And then ego ruined the sport for the longest time, right? You know, Tony George, the owner of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, he wanted to see more American racing drivers and wanted to see more ovals than what CART. So he broke away and formed a different league. It was called the Indy Racing League. And it, you know, you can hope and wish for more American drivers, but it's not a lack of desire from Americans to race cars. It's a lack of money, you know. Yep. Auto racing, the answer to the question is how fast do you want to go is answered with another question, and that is how much do you want to spend? It is an incredibly expensive sport, and you need to have sponsorship, and you need to have money. And at the time, in the late 80s and 90s, there weren't Americans with the financial backing to be able to break into the, you know, IndyCar racing. So you were seeing a lot of, you know, people from around the world because they wanted to be in CART because CART was the best racing in the world. And, you know, so branching off, historians call it the split. So you had championship auto racing teams, and then you had the IRL, and they each went off and went their own separate ways, you know, driven by ego. It took a long time for them to come back together. And the sport has suffered. It still suffers today. The Indianapolis 500 doesn't suffer. All the other races, you know, it's slowly trying to get back to where it used to be. And, you know, in IndyCars, it's just the ovals, I think, suffer maybe the most. There's, even though a lot of fans like to see the ovals, they just don't show up like they do to a road course or, you know, like the Long Beach Grand Prix will have this, you know, unbelievable crowd. But you can go to Milwaukee for an oval race and the crowd will be a bit iffy. You know, the crowd might be in Iowa, might be a bit iffy. I think my favorite era, late 80s, early 90s, before the split, that was the best racing on the planet.
So good. Okay, I see There's a new racing movie coming out, F1 with Brad Pitt. It's coming to theaters, I think, next month. Ray, has Hollywood ever made a decent racing movie ever? Because I watch them, and every time I just go, oh, goodness, this is not.
There's two of my favorites.
Okay, what do you got? Because I'll take whatever you have.
I love the Steve McQueen movie, Le Mans.
There you go. That's probably better than anything coming out today, yeah.
If you have not seen the movie out there in the audience, in the first 45 minutes, there's no dialogue. It is just like PA announcer and stuff like that. Yeah. And one of the first words out is Steve McQueen meets this, you know, a wife of another racer. They're talking about something, and he issues this great quote: "Racing is life. Anything before and after is just waiting." And I'm like, that is beautiful. I also like an old Formula One movie, James Garner. It's called Grand Prix.
Oh yeah, Grand Prix. And, yeah,
that's cool too. You know, but. Yeah, you know, there's an IndyCar movie a handful of years ago. What was that called? Rennie Harlan directed it. I think it's called Driven with Sylvester Stallone.
With Stallone, yes.
Yeah, and see, Stallone wanted to make a Formula One movie, and he just couldn't get the backing for it. So he said, we'll just do the next best thing. We'll do this. We'll do it in IndyCar. And it was cool just to see your sport represented, you know, in a movie. But this F1 movie, I mean, Brad Pitt's like, what is he? I think I'm 61. I think he might be a bit older than me.
He's getting up there. Yeah, it's not the young guy anymore. I'm not sure he's getting in an F1 car right now.
Yeah, you know, while Fernando Alonso drives a racing car, and then Lewis Hamilton's in his young 40s as well. Yeah, and he drives a Formula One car. Those two are a breed apart. You know, so the believability of Brad Pitt, you know, coming in there. You know, it's good for Formula One. It's good for auto racing.
Yes,
I like to welcome the new fans into the sport. You know,
agreed.
And, you know, with Formula One success recently from that Drive to Survive, you know, miniseries every year, you know, yeah, well, you know, it's about time, people, you know, welcome to the sport of motorsports.
Yeah. Way to catch up. You know, we've currently got a very strong group of young drivers. You cover them in your book. Mm-hmm. We've got a group all under like the age of like 26, 27, Christian Lundgaard, Pato O'Ward, Santino Ferrucci, Colton Herta is baby. And you've got that kind of next generation of guys. We've got veterans. We've got Scott Dixon. We've got Will Power. You've got some characters with like Joseph Newgarden, Scott McLaughlin, and of course, you know, my cousin Connor Daly. Is this a group that could maybe put Indy back on the map a little more? Because I really like some of these drivers we've got running right now.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Scott Dixon. You know, I think he's arguably the greatest IndyCar driver of all time. But that's just the greatest IndyCar driver of all time right now. His teammate Alex Palou, if he keeps this up, he's going to be the greatest IndyCar
driver. It's unreal.
Of all time. He is an unbelievable talent. You know, who knows if he'll have another dalliance with Formula One or not? We'll see. But yeah, these young bucks and coming up, you know, it's. What's interesting now is that they're all friends, you know, they're all hanging out on social media and they're all playing golf together and stuff like that. You know, back in the day, well, I think that's kind of true of all sports. You know, now everyone, you know, all
you're
basketball
right.
players, they go to Las Vegas and hang out and do things like that. But back in our day, Clinton, you know, back in the 70s, racing drivers didn't befriend other racing drivers because they got killed too often.
Yes.
You know, nobody wanted to lose a close friend. So, you know, people kind of kept to themselves a little bit because these catastrophic injuries and these fatalities would happen, you know, kind of on the reg, right? You know, and the sport has really gotten so much more safe. And sometimes we get anesthetized to that, you know, that it's still dangerous. These cats are going around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, terminal velocity at the end of the straightaways, 240 miles an hour, you know, and you're surrounded by concrete walls. It's things happen in a flash. They go well over the distance of a football field in a second, you know, and that includes the end zones. The speeds are there, but you know, thankfully the injuries aren't, but there's still, you know, these, you know, the crashes, there's still, you know, the propensity for injuries, head injuries in particular. Simon Pagenaud, you know, through no fault of his own, had a brake failure, you know, almost 2 years ago now. He hasn't been in a race car since, you know, suffered a head injury, concussion. He's getting along fine, right? But, you know, his career has been interrupted. Maybe his career has been ended, you know, former Indy 500 champion and a series champion as well. And, but yeah, these young cats, you know, you mentioned Connor Daly, you know, he's just a cool dude. You know, I mentioned this in the book. You know, he on social media, these two kids in Indiana, you know, like, hey, the new Star Wars movie's coming out. Do you want to see it with us? He's like, yes, I so totally do. You know, so there's a picture of him on Instagram with, you know, two kids and him, going to the Star Wars movie. And it's those types of people that, you know, it's kind of like hockey players too. You know, these racing drivers are, and hockey players, not these, you know, not these like football players, these big freaks and things like that. You know, they're just like normal guys. In fact, you know, you look at racing drivers to fit into a race car, you got to be kind of a smaller type of dude to begin with, you know? So, you know, they're not these, you know, big, you know, bigger than, they might be bigger than life personalities, but they're not bigger than life physically. Right. You know, and they tend to be just a bunch of good dudes that like to hang out.
Well, and, you know, it's funny that you brought up Alex Palou, because he's the next guy I wanted to ask you about. He's already won three of the first four races this year. This kid is talented. You cover him quite a bit in the book. And just to see the success that he is having already this year, this kid might be special. He might be that kind of guy.
Yeah, he's it's been identified right away. You know, he raced some as a rookie. Chip Ganassi, one of the biggest teams in the sport, you know, said this guy's got some talent, signed him up. His very first race with Chip Ganassi, he won. He hasn't really slowed down much since. He's a super talented driver. He hasn't had the brakes fall his way at Indianapolis. He has finished up high on a couple of occasions. And one time he got taken out on pit lane in an accident with Rinus VK. He was able to continue in the race and he recovered. But, you know, he went from, you know, a car that was running one or two in the race to, you know, ended up finishing in the top 10. But he had, you know, that's quite a drive back from, you know, being last, you know, for a while there. So, super talented driver. He's got a great team behind him with Chip Ganassi. He'll be one of the favorites in a couple of weeks.
Hey, just a quick reminder, make sure that you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week, as we do have new articles going up over there. We do have links to the podcast. We do have links to the videos over there. You can, of course, find information on the host as well. And you can also find links to get Daily Dose gear. Maybe you need a t-shirt, sweatshirt, hoodie, even a hat in your life. Make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com each and every week. Now, let's get back to our interview with author Ray Hartgen.
Ray, we've had back-to-back winners multiple times. I mean, you look back, Mari Rose, Wilbur Shaw, Billy Vukovic. Of course, you mentioned Al Unser. Elio Castroneves won it back-to-back. Recently now, we are looking at Joseph Newgarden. He's won two in a row. Is there any reason he couldn't do it a third time in a row this year?
Because he can certainly do it. You know, he drives for Roger Penske, who owns Indianapolis Motor Speedway now. Roger Penske's won 20 Indy 500s, including the last two with Joseph Newgarden. So, you know, to say, is there a reason he couldn't win? Absolutely not. There's a lot of reasons that he could win. He's a super talented driver. I love, you know, the IndyCar series has moved their television package from NBC to Fox. You know, and one of the first commercials this year came out for the IndyCar series featured Joseph Newgarden. I really love the way that, you know, Fox is promoting their drivers. They have commercials also featuring Pato O'Ward and Alex Palou. But these cool kind of edgy, I think, you know, they're good for the sport, drive attention. Hopefully people will tune in. But, you know, if you've not watched the 500 before, you're looking for a favorite. You know, we've mentioned a couple of them, Palou, Chip Ganassi, his teammate, Scott Dixon, who's only won once, but he has always been strong at the speedway. And Joseph Newgarden, who took him 12 years to finally win one, but he's won the last two in a row. I did want to add, if you are new to this sport and you want somebody to cheer for, but you want a dark horse, because we just talked about some favorites. Yeah. My favorite dark horse is an Indianapolis-based team called Dreyer Reinbold Racing. They race exactly one IndyCar race a year, and that is the Indianapolis 500. They enter two cars, and they always qualify, at least so far, for over 20 years. They've qualified for the race, always run strong. And these are a bunch of guys that don't do this full time. You know, this is a part-time job, pit crew, the whole thing. Wow. But preparing these cars, racing up against the big boys and giving the big boys all they can handle. If you're out there, one of the drivers this year is Ryan Hunter Ray, a former Indianapolis 500 champion and IndyCar Series champion as well. So check out Dreyer Reinbold. They're always the fun underdog team to watch.
Now, if you're listening and you sit there and you go, I'm not interested in auto racing. I'm not interested in Indy. I know nothing about it. Trust us, you're going to be just fine. There's a couple ways you can kind of catch up. One, know this. Ray mentioned it. Penske and Ganassi are the Yankees and the Dodgers. They run everything right now. But every year, there's always someone that seems kind of sneak in there and kind of mix it up a little bit. I will say this. If you need a prep before the race, which is coming Memorial Day weekend, go watch the Netflix series, 100 Days to Indy. If you haven't watched a couple seasons of that, it is phenomenal. You get to know the drivers. You get to know a little bit about what all goes into. And you know what you get to know? You get to know the passion that comes through, because those drivers, they want to win and ultra competitive. And if you need a prep, you go pick up Indy 500 by Ray Hartjean, because I'm telling you, it's going to give you a prep. You're going to understand it a little bit more when you watch it. And when you watch it, you suddenly have a vested interest. It's funny because I have a bunch of, you know, sports friends, and we have different friends, and they follow whatever, basketball, football, whatever. You know what we started doing, Ray? We started saying before the race season, at the beginning of the day, I send out a text, hey, this race is going, and everybody puts in who they pick is going to win. It's what we would do if you and I went to the races tonight. Yeah. We would say, well, I'm going to pick the 17. I'm going to pick the 24, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you cheer like crazy. These people, they don't know anything about racing. They don't have to. Suddenly they have a vested interest, and they're rooting and going crazy when the races are playing on TV. And I'm like, for me, this is kind of downtime of year. We don't have the NFL. NBA's winding down. NHL's winding down. Suddenly I have racing fans that are like, I'm all in, because you have a vested interest.
Yeah.
Trust me, you will have fun if you go check some of it out. Ray, I'm going to put you in charge of Indy Racing. I'm going to make you El Presidente. You are right now Ray Penske, and I'm going to put you in charge of all things. You are king of all things. How do we bring Indy back to the forefront of the American conscience? Is that too big of a task? Because it used to be the biggest thing. Everybody kind of had an idea. Maybe they aren't glued to it, but they kind of watched it. How do we get Indy back?
Because yeah, you know, I want really I want more development in the series, and I think a lot of people do too. You know, I want them to issue a set of rules and then say, hey, if you want to go out there and build a car, build a car. You know, that's the way it used to be. But there were factory teams, right? You know, not that long ago, there'd be a Lola chassis and a March chassis, but Roger Penske would build his own. You know, out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Rick Dallas built his own. The Gallmer chassis, that chassis won the 1992 Indianapolis 500. I like that ability where if you want to invest the money, you can do that. So I would like to see, you know, like an open, rule book where you establish rules, build a chassis to the rules. And if you think you can build a better one than
currently, let's see some ingenuity. That idea. Yes.
And then it would be great to be able to entice another engine manufacturer into it. Yeah. You know, there's been a dalliance with Ferrari for a number of years. Currently it's a Chevrolet and Honda. But it'd be cool to have at least another engine. I also like, you know, back in the days when you could build your own engines.
Yes.
You know, one of my favorite stories is, and it's in the book, it's in about the 1980 race, and a racer named Roger Rager. And Roger Rager, he had this idea. He thought, you know, I'm going to get a stock block Chevy engine out of a school bus in a junkyard, because this engine has been working overtime, hauling these heavy loads, these kids back and forth to school. His philosophy was, well, you know, the heat cycles that went through this thing is going to make this block pretty much impervious, right? 1980, he out-qualified a lot of big boys, Tom Sneva, A.J. Foyt. I believe he had out-qualified Gordon Johncock. He was running well in the race, but got caught up in another person's accident. Jim McElrath spun in front of him. He spun, missing him. But, you know, here was this guy who, you know, just built an engine in his garage, put it in a car, a chassis that was a couple years old, and gave people a run for the money. So, yeah, you know, it'd be kind of cool to see some ingenuity come back into the series. Let's get some, you know, diversity of chassis, diversity of engines, and get that mix and matching approach together again. And, you know, if you've got the investment, if you can make that investment to do it, I'd like to see people give it a try again.
I love that idea. I love that a lot. And I absolutely agree with you. It's funny because a few years back, I did a Daily Dose top five when it came time for the Indy 500. And I said top five ways to improve the Indy 500 and just Indy racing in general. And that was exactly one of the things that I said. Bring back the ingenuity. It used to be creative minds could go back there and compete. And they've kind of banned everything coming in. You know, they've kind of ruled everything like that out. I don't like that. I also do like, and I know it's a Netflix series, whatever, who's going to watch it. But when you kind of get to know the drivers, it kind of, you have a rooting interest. We used to know the drivers. We used to know almost every driver when we were younger. You knew almost, like, maybe you didn't know him personally, but you knew a little bit about him, kind of where he's from. It gives you a rooting interest, at least. I like when we know the drivers a little bit more. And that's where I think right now NASCAR has an advantage over Indy.
Yeah, and I think the sport that does it better than anybody else is the NHRA in motorsports. Every ticket in the NHRA is a paddock pass. It's so you can walk around to the garages, and they're not garages. They're just like roped off little tent areas where they are tearing down the car and rebuilding the car after every run. And you are right there. Like when I was a kid, we were called knucklers because that's what you would see. Between, you know, we would have our fingers on the chain link fence, and, you know, the driver on the other side would see our knuckles. And you know, us race fans were called knucklers. They're not even knucklers in the NHRA. I mean, you're right there. You're chatting up drivers, you know, and chatting up mechanics. A NASCAR, I think, you know, does a really good job of, you know, promoting their people and you know, having access to it. I mean, you see the beginning of the Daytona 500, and just so many people are in the pit lane and in the infield, and, you know, on the tri-oval and you know, being part of that spectacle. And being part of that sport, you know, I watch some NASCAR. You know, NASCAR kind of confuses me in a way, and that it doesn't confuse me. But, you know, if you just kind of casually glance at a NASCAR race, there's a lot of 1.5 mile ovals, right? And you know, there's, you know, what's the difference between Chicagoland and Kansas? And you know, you just kind of, you know, like you see a lot of them that seem to be the same. But you know, that sport's got some. I mean, they've got some problems they need to overcome. I mean, it wasn't that long ago they'd have 43 cars at every race. Now they're more like 37 cars. They're beginning to lose some cars, losing some interest. Still, racing's racing. When February comes around, you know, February is, you know, when the Daytona 500 is, I'll watch it just because I've missed racing for a couple of months.
Oh, it's like watching preseason football. I'm glued to it for that. you absolutely love it because it's finally back. No, I agree with, you know, so many of the points that you made there. And, you know, the other thing that NASCAR has done is they've really tried to legislate, let's get more crashes. And they can pretend that's not what they're doing, but it's 1,000,000% what they're doing. They're trying to get crashes. They want crashes. They want fights. They're still showing Cale Yarborough getting out and fighting an Allison. So, you know, they want that stuff. They act like they don't, but they do, or they legislate it out. They don't want to get rid of it.
All right. Yeah, there's a race at the end of last year with some bumping and grinding right at the very end. And it's,
they,
you know,
love it.
What type of decisions do you want to make there? It's, you know, very, there's a, for those of you who are more than casual race fans, in NASCAR, there's the right rear hook, and that is turning left into somebody's right rear on an oval, and that just sends them straight into the wall. Super, super dangerous. That still happens with far too much regularity. They have at times sat some people down. They sat, you know, Chase Elliott out of a race a couple of years ago for doing that. He's the most popular driver in NASCAR. So, you know, they are trying to get some, like, the right rear hook out of the sport, because that can be just flat out nasty. Crashes are, you don't want to see them happen, but if they happen, you want to see them.
Oh, sure. You know, I think you're right.
It is, right? You know, it's part of the spectacle. But, you know, at the speeds, you know, even with NASCAR, I mean, you look at a crash like Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s crash at Daytona, it looked kind of relatively, you know, run of the mill. Yeah, and so it's a crash that ended up killing him. You know, so you always got to be careful with racing.
You just never know. Ray, I'm going to put you on the spot. I got one last question for you. And if you need to take a minute to make sure you get it right. But I told you before, I enjoyed the book. I wrote a little bit for it, and it was such an amazing read. Is there a story that you would like to share with listeners that you're like, if you don't hear anything, at least hear this? It might be one in the book. It might be one that maybe didn't make the book. Is there a story that you think of and you go, that is a story that people should hear?
I'm just one of those Indy 500 nerds that I like love them all. And I love the little tiny things that have just become traditions, you know, over the years. Right. You know, and so, like, you know, there's a chapter in the book called Got Milk, you know, so the, you know, the, you know, the famous victory circle photograph, you know, is the wreath over him. You hold up the number of fingers of how many races you've won and your bottle of milk, you know, and you chug it. And lately it's been pouring it over your head and you're throwing it around like that. But just, you know, just sharing with people, you know, through the book, the story of the milk, the story of the creation of the BorgWarner Trophy. You know, the BorgWarner Trophy is iconic. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's got the faces of every winner on the trophy in a 3D relief, right? You know, and so, you know, writing the chapter about, you know, the BorgWarner Trophy getting updated with Joseph Newgarden's picture from winning the, or his face from the 2023 race. You know, I like sharing that story. I mean, I think it's those little tiny things. I love in the book sharing the stories of some of these racing drivers, you know, like the Andretti family. You know, and, you know, they are IndyCar royalty, despite the fact that only one Andretti has won a race and it only happened one time. You know, Mario Andretti won the race in 1969 and it became famous being at the racetrack and hearing the track announcer, Tom Carnegie, yell out, "And Andretti is slowing down." You know, of course he was slowing down. That's what happened. Just this hard luck. His son, Michael Andretti, one of the best IndyCar racers of all time, never won an Indy 500, came very close a couple of times. He's led more laps at Indianapolis than Rick Mears. Rick Mears has won four races. Now, that's how good of a race driver Michael Andretti was. And then Mario's grandson, Marco. Marco's in a car entered this year. You know, so I enjoyed, like, you know, taking readers through this, like, this royal family of auto racing, you know, and talking about A.J. Foyt, talking about, you know, Roger Penske. You know, I hope I did the sport justice. You know, I have a big bar to overcome. You know, I want to do what this book did for me as a kid, right? Higdon's book, you know, I want, you know, somebody, it's not a children's book, you know, my book, it's a, right. It's almost 300 pages long. But you know, I want to inspire the passion, for the event and in a reader, you know, and hopefully it send them on a lifelong journey with the Indianapolis 500, this thing that you look forward to every year. The drama, you know, that goes around it, you know. But yeah, great question, Clint. But I think there's a lot of these little nuggets in the book that I'm proud of, and you know, I want people to experience and look back and say, "Oh, so that was a cool little bit of information." And they'll file that thing away.
Well, I know that I read it. I'm a racing fan. I read it. I still learned a lot from it. It was such a great book. I truly, truly enjoyed it. Ray, where can people find your work? Where can they keep up with what you have going? Where's the best place to go purchase the Indy 500?
Yeah, you can purchase it anywhere. Fine books are sold. It's published by Morgan James Publishing. So, you know, pick it up Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere. Or you can pick it up at my website, rayhartshin.com. If you do order it from rayhartshin.com, it ships for free. But just, you know, be sure to put a note. I'll sign it to whomever you want me to sign it to. And maybe that might be something kind of cool. And if anybody out there ever wants to chat with me about auto racing or anything else for that matter, hit me up on social media at I'm at Ray Hartshin at everything. Just hit me up at Ray Hartshin. My email address is rayhartshin@gmail.com. Be happy to chat you up, particularly as it comes to the Indy 500. Geez, we'll just talk forever like Clint and I do all the time.
Right.
Clint and I talked about the Indy 500 for about 30 minutes before this episode even started.
That's absolutely correct. We'll probably talk for another 30 after. Ray, I cannot thank you enough for coming in. I genuinely, like I said, I was honored to be able to contribute in any way that I could. I loved reading the book. I loved the other book that you sent as well. I need to go out and put down some reviews for you. You can have to tell me where to do that when we
start. Yeah, you know, anybody out there who reads the book, if you could just please leave your authentic review at any bookseller site, be appreciated. It helps trip algorithms, of course, but also helps readers decide if they want to, you know, take a dive in a book. It's the most important thing for us authors is to get reviews. And I'm not pandering for the 5-star review. I just want you to give your authentic review. If it happens to be 5 stars, that's great. Now, if you think it's a 1-star review, you might just want to kind of keep it to yourself.
Keep that to yourself. But, we don't need the negativity in our lives. We've got enough things in life going on. Ray, I cannot thank you enough for spending some time with us today on the Daily Dose. I genuinely enjoyed it. I would encourage you, if you're a racing fan, if you're not a racing fan, you're going to learn a ton from it. It is highly, highly readable, though. You're not going to be reading it going, "This is over my head. I didn't understand it." It doesn't matter if you're a huge racing fan or you're just someone that's going, "I'm just kind of passing by and thought I'd check it out while I was on the beach." You will enjoy it. Ray, I can't thank you enough. Thanks for joining us again on the Daily Dose. Thoroughly enjoyed your visit. And again, don't be a stranger. You got anything else coming out? You got to be sure to let us know.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity, Clint. It's always great speaking with you.
Yeah.
I love what you do. So, you know, thank you so much. And looking forward to talking about anything. I mean, we got lots to talk about.
We do.
We like football. We like all sorts of stuff. And yeah, so yeah, we'll definitely talk again.
Absolutely.
Hey, next week on The Dose, I know we've missed a few big NFL events lately because we've had some very special guests. Never fear. Next week, we will be catching you up on both the NFL draft and the NFL schedule release, which is coming out tonight. You will not want to miss it. So be sure you check out The Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to author Ray Hargen for spending some time with us today. We always enjoy your visits to The Dose. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com each week and checking out what we have going on over there. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the podcast, for sharing the videos, and for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.